The Belmont Stakes is finally here. Don't miss out on Naira Bets' exclusive limited-time offer with a $25 money-back Belmont Stakes win bet. Just bet $25 on one horse to win the Belmont Stakes. If your horse finishes second or third, you get your money back. Pretty sweet, right? The bonus is only available for new customers. Sign up today at NairaBets.com and use the promo code MONEY25. That's NairaBets.com, promo code MONEY25. I'm not asking for the world you see. I'm down on my bed at knees. And I'm just asking God, let please. Oh, please talk to me. Until an I love her. Hey, hey, talk to me. Until an I love her. Hello and welcome to the Naira Bets Late Pick 5 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn bunker once again. World travel, taking a break from the world travel, going back to Ascot on the 14th, just back from Italy. And we'll start off the show not just with an introduction, but also a thank you to the man I'm about to bring onto the microphone. He is the People's Champion, and he's a pretty darn good podcast host, too. I'm talking about Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
PTF, what's going on? I appreciate it. Glad I could help. It was easy. No, it wasn't easy. It's just a completely different way of going about it, but it worked out good. I was lucky enough to have our friend and our good friend, Nick Tamaro, on to kind of guide us along with the Naira coverage last week, and that made it a lot more comfortable for me as well. And, you know, Nick and I have hour long conversations all the time. So what's an hour long podcast?
You just record it that time. That's all. And that's so smart to reach out to real pros like Matt Bernier and Nick Tamaro. I'll really respect your podcasting abilities. I'll accept your Wally Pip taunts a lot more when, and I'm not naming names here, but sometimes you get one where you're just dancing with a broom, and then I'll be really impressed.
I'll just start talking. I'll stop asking them questions. I'll just let them sit there.
That'll be great for the listeners. All right. We have a special guest coming up later in the show. My old friend Southside Johnny is going to be here. He's playing at Belmont after the races on Friday, concert included with the admission to the park, and it's going to be fun. So if you're already going to be going out to Belmont, make sure stick around, even if you could only stick around for some of it before you go and enjoy your evening festivities. Check out Southside Johnny, one of the great rock performers that I have ever seen. Brings a lot of soul into the mix too, and it's the good stuff. JK, unfortunately, you've got a wedding to go to. I don't know who these people are who get married on Triple Crown weekends, but apparently they're out there. We've heard some horror stories. You will be sorely missed, and I'm sad you won't get to see Southside Johnny. I think you might dig it.
Yeah, you know, it's I don't know whose idea it was to get married on a Triple Crown day, but you know, I'll do my best. I'll do my best to do what I can do from a distance.
I like it. That's fair. And we'll be sharing all of our thoughts on the Saturday card on the late week in the Money Players podcast. But we're here right now, before we bring in Southside Johnny, to talk about the late pick five on Friday. We tell people over and over, help us out, sign up for your Naira Bets account and use our promo code MONEY. I believe they might also be a special promo code MONEY25 for this week, but MONEY is our main promo code. When you sign up for your Naira Bets account, you'll get that bet 200, get 200 bonus. But I already said this at the beginning of the show, so I don't need to go back there right now. Instead, we're going to go right to race 7. And I have to ask, JK, on a podcast dedicated to horse racing and horse players, can you really go against a horse named Maven?
Obviously, for the name reason, it's a tough thing to do. But I think the PPs make it a challenge as well. Look, I think that Maven is the most talented horse in here. I think he's the fastest horse in here. I think that the figures that not everyone has 4.5 figures, but the figures that you can find suggest that he's the fastest. The horse by the name of Lebda, Lebda, that ran behind the Maven, or not the Maven, but Maven.
Good friend's going to like that.
Ran behind
one.
Ran behind the Maven. Ended up running back and running well as well. So we talk about that as a kind of a new age key race thing. I don't necessarily need them to win. I just need their figures to make sense and to match what was previously done. Maven is a single for me in this early, in this late pick five, in the first race of this late pick five. He's a single for me, and the rest of them will just have to beat me.
I was a little bit interested, and I really want your opinion, because I know you're very big on the Southern California sprinters coming east angle, and that's one of the things, along with just pace analysis, that led me to take a long look at four left, and I was thinking there might be a little bit of a saver going on in my Naira Betts late pick five with four left, where I will also have plenty of Maven on there. What do you think of that one?
I actually was involved in that race. And the main competitor, Raging Whiskey, who was 6-5 that day, missed the break and was like really far back and, you know, kind of came running a little bit late, but not really. I thought it was a weak race. Mm-hmm. Four left was reaching for the wire going 4.5. Now they're going to be going 5.5, facing more pace pressure, having better horses running at them. The ship for a young horse. Mario Gutierrez is not that familiar with Belmont Park like some of these other guys are. He'll either move early or move late. I don't need him at all. Give me somebody else if I had to take another pick.
That's a good analysis, and maybe I'll shift my play a little. I'm still going to use a little four left, but maybe I'll take a little bit higher of a percentage on the Maven. We're both doing it now. There's no way this horse is actually named for Dave Gutfreund, is there? Does he have any connection to these connections?
No, I don't think so, but I'm going to pretend that he is.
Yeah, and we'll just keep calling him the Maven and confusing everybody all the more. We also talk a lot about the angle in these two-year-old stakes where so many horses have done their winning on the lead of trying to land yourself on the best closer as a horse, not necessarily to be able to get up and win, but one that should be passing horses late and have a good chance to get into the under positions in vertical exotics. For me, that one here would be the Italian-American, also fine hunch play for me as well. The Italian-American, I think, should be running late. Seems like a type who could run third and fourth. Might use the Maven cold on top and have some the Italian-American in second, third, and fourth in some supers as well, just as another way to tackle this race beyond the Naira Betts late pick five. And with that, we're going to move on to race eight. This one starts a really cool bet that Naira have introduced for the weekend. I know you're a big fan of these cross-day picks. This one's particularly interesting for a couple of reasons. I'll let you talk about it.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed when Churchill did this, the amount that it handled. I thought it would do a lot better. It's funny. Horse players like to complain. They complain about a lot of things, and then something pops up that kind of fits into what they want, and they don't participate. So I'm very hopeful that people will participate in this special 15% takeout, mandatory payout, 20-cent pick six over 2 days. It starts on Friday with the True North. It starts, and then you have the Grade Two Belmont Gold Cup on Friday as well, and then you have four races on Saturday: the Woody Stevens, the Met Mile, the Manhattan, and the Belmont. So it's like I said, it's a 20-cent minimum wager, but it is not a jackpot wager. It's a mandatory payout. So this should do well. It should do well, and I sure hope it does well. I'm going to be retweeting and tweeting and carrying on about it. We need to support this, because here's the problem. If this doesn't go good, then, you know, people start looking to, oh, well, the jackpot's doing great. Maybe we should go that direction. If the 20-cent, 15% takeout, mandatory payout doesn't move the needle, then maybe horse players aren't price sensitive. We need to make sure we prevent people from thinking that we are not price sensitive.
Well, we know that we're extraordinarily price sensitive, whether you know it or not, honestly, when you just look at the basic economic effects of takeout, but we don't need to go down that rabbit hole here. In short, I agree with everything you're saying. I have no doubt that if this was given a long time to succeed, it would completely succeed on its own. But when they do these things, not quite as a one-off, but almost a little bit like a one-off, it is important to vote with our dollars and support bets like this. One more time, JK, what are the six races in this cross-day pick six?
Friday, the True North. Friday, the Belmont Gold Cup. Saturday, the Woody Stevens, the Met Mile, the Manhattan, and the Belmont Stakes.
All right. Well, you and me right now, we'll make a pact. We're going to get involved in this race. We'll bet it on Naira Bets, and we'll try to make one of our big scores for the weekend, putting our money where our mouth is. You down with that? We'll hash out the ticket off air.
Unless you try to make me use some horse that I don't want to use, and then I'll make you do it on your own.
That's a very good plan B, and that does happen to us from time to time, but usually we can find a way to achieve detente. All right, back to this race. Old friend Strike Power in here looks really good to me as an improving horse who had a successful throat surgery. Maybe suggesting that new level of performance from last time is sustainable. But boy, this is a great race. There are so many ways to go in here, JK. Very excited to hear your thoughts.
Catalina Cruiser was one that caught my attention.
Of course.
I would be lying to you if I didn't tell you that I screenshot the box on the past performances that show Catalina Cruiser was undefeated. City of Light beat him, and I text that to Mike McCarthy just to remind him that he's the one who snapped this one's winning streak at the Breeders' Cup last year. If he runs back to his previous numbers, and I'm very proud of myself for not calling he a she yet, because the Catalina part really throws me off. If he runs back to his previous races at Del Mar in 2018, the San Diego, the Pat O'Brien, or even his allowance race, he's going to be extremely tough in here. Very confident move by John Sadler to put him on the plane and to get him over here. Let's not forget, outside of Accelerate, John Sadler has struggled to put a horse on the plane. This horse should be over bet a little bit. Definitely is a use to me because he has the potential to run off the screen. But I'm going to kind of give this horse that I loved on Derby Day, the Churchill Downs Sprint Runner, Do Share, another shot. I thought Do Share ran extremely well, two back at Aqueduct, and ran well enough when facing Mattoli in the last race. And so I think Do Share is one that could kind of pick up the pieces here. They're going to be going 6.5, which is my favorite distance, looking for a closer. I think it's just that kind of in between 6 and 7, where sometimes horses might go a little bit too quick. I completely agree with you on Strike Power. Catalina Cruiser makes sense. One more that I'll give a mention to is Recruiting Ready.
Yep.
Who ran well in that race at Keeneland that I thought was productive with Bobby's Wicked One, who didn't come back and run so well turf sprinting last weekend. But I thought Recruiting Ready is one that's a talented type that if let loose or can kind of get a good trip, could be dangerous. A very fun race. Very fun race. I've kind of think I've had enough of Whitmore, but I wouldn't be surprised if he won either. So I'm going to build a lot of things around Catalina Cruiser, Strike Power, and Do Share. Do Share will be my top choice.
You say you might have had enough of Whitmore. Whitmore showing signs that he might have had enough of racing. I didn't like the antics in the gate last time for a professional horse. I don't remember him doing that in the past. Just makes me very scared to use him here. I will lean against Whitmore. And I know what you're saying about using Catalina Cruiser based on the old talent, but my knock there, and I might be wrong about this, but I feel like this was a horse that was really regarded as a super strong workhorse, and nothing looks wrong with the works exactly, but I haven't been as impressed. So I don't know. At the price Catalina Cruiser will be against competition the likes of Strike Power and Recruiting Ready, I'm more happy to go with the latter two, but I don't think I need to cut off my what's the old expression? Cut off my nose to spite my face and get too aggressive trying to beat Catalina Cruiser. Maybe there's a defensive use in there. It'll depend how these tickets fully line out for me. Any other thoughts on this very interesting running of the True North before we move it along?
Well, we can move it along.
All right, let's go to the New York. Homerique. Remember Homerique last time I tipped on here? I mean, short price, nothing to be too proud of, but on class alone. And looking back at the race, that might have been a little sharp, that didn't have a pace that was really run to suit. The fact that she got up there with this as the goal all along, I just think she's laid out and looking real, real strong. There are some good horses in here, but I think Homerique's going to be too good for them once again. What about you?
Yeah, she's going to be hard to beat. I love the fact she drew outside, too. I know she probably wants cover, but I think she'll still get it. I don't want her buried inside trying to get out late. And like you said, I think that the concern last time the reason you got 4 to 5 is there was a concern the mile on the 16th was going to be too short. She was beaten a length to Magic Wand in Wild Illusion going a mile and a quarter in France in a grade one. There's no grade one types in here. There's surely no, French grade one types in here. I think she's in a gallop. I think that one of my minimum plays in the contest will be used either on just a straight win bet on her, no matter what the price is, just to get a minimum out of the way, or maybe even some doubles in and out of her. I think she's a layover in this field.
Agreed. Now let's move on to the next race in the sequence, which is also part of the two-day pick six we mentioned before, the Belmont Gold Cup, which is a pretty cool race. Had the international participation last year, and this year there's a horse who's got a lot of angles that I like, and that's Red Knight. Moved early into the hot pace last time out. I always talk about that, the old Andy Beyer thing. And now, when you look at the pace figures of this one relative to the field, has a chance to wire them. I love it, JK, when you have a closer who looks to be able, or horse, who's, when I say closer, a finisher who looks to be able to have that tactical advantage of being on the lead. That's a little different than the closer's dilemma we talk about. This isn't one with the finishing kick that's been shown that needs to run super efficiently. This one, I'm happy with this one setting a slow pace because I feel like when the real running starts, this is the one who has the advantage anyway. It's going to be Red Knight for me in this race that features so many podcast famous horses. Where are you?
I just want the horses, if they have a parentheses FR, parentheses GB, parentheses IRE. Those are all the ones that I'm going to use. I don't know how to handicap these races. We obviously don't come across them very often. It's not something that takes place in the United States very often. So to try to dive into it from my own perspective, I think could probably be a little misleading. I should probably just listen to what other people are saying. I will say this. The first thing I would do is look for horses that have gone 2 miles and have done it successfully with Timeform US has figures for a lot of these horses. So Canisar on the outside for Arnold Delacour ran second back in 2018 and going the 2 miles. So that's one that I would consider with Joel up. He's obviously a great finisher, a very strong rider. Don't see the 2 miles worth of a ride being an issue for him. But then I would really pretty much go with what other – kind of international type punters are suggesting. Hopefully Pete can let me know a little bit about what Rob Dove, one of the top 10 pro punters in the UK today, has to say about the race, because that would obviously help me along. But I'll probably defer to the parentheses horses or the horses that you guys tell me to play.
All right. Well, Red Knight should be on that list for sure. I will check in with Dove and see. I won't do the catchphrase because you already did it. We can't let this race go without opportunities to talk at least quickly about Arklo and Hunter O'Reilly, can we?
Arklo's an interesting one. I've always felt like he's just kind of a grindy type, but he's tactical for a 2 mile race. He's going to be sort of tactical here. I think he makes a lot of sense, really. If he can handle the extra distance, I know they've always felt like the longer the better for him. And I've caught myself fading him in shorter races. Keeneland, when he ran at a mile to 16th, he was a no-go for me. And obviously he didn't even finish that race. He had some issues at the gate. But I think I think he's one that can make a little bit of sense. And he'll be wearing the yellow and green, which is enough to get me nervous.
Now I've seen it all. JK almost tipping Arklo. And then Hunter O'Reilly, the famous horse, Hurricane Anthony, who just texted me that I should stop recording the show and call him because he has an important message. I think he'll wait till the end of the show and then I'll call him. But who famously gave his sore winner route on Hunter O'Reilly up at the Paddock Bar in Saratoga, horrifying all the women, children, men, adults, basically anyone who was in earshot during the worst route of all time. I wonder if he'll be back on the Hunter. Do you see anything to recommend him?
He's the American type that could still possibly get involved. He had a chance going the 2 miles back in 2017 and was beaten 2.5 lengths, which is definitely not something that you would fault him for. Sure. I'm going to try to stick with the ones with the parentheses.
You basically have no opinion in this race, is what you've said different ways. I keep asking you about horses, and it's like you're saying the same thing over and over.
Sure, I mean, sure. I mean, that's the thing is, I don't know. Okay, so if you talk about a horse that ran 6 furlongs, who's stretching out to a mile and an eighth, I know what a 6 furlong horse stretching out to a mile and an eighth can look like. I've seen that before. I've seen that figure pattern. I've seen that story when you start from the bottom of the PPs up. I know if a 6 furlong horse based on pedigree can stretch to the mile and an eighth. I've seen that. I've got no clue when it comes to a mile and a half horse going 2 miles or a mile and a 16th horse going 2 miles. I don't really know what it looks like because we don't do it on a daily basis.
I'd love to see this become a little bit more of a division. I think it could be another interesting route for some horses if we and you know, give opportunities to have some more interesting races potentially. I'm not saying I want to see one every day, but it does seem like something you could see more. And I hope that folks don't mistake that this is your opinion as a handicapper, as a horse player. You're not like down on the concept of the race, I don't think, though.
It's cool. No, I have no problem with it. I mean, it's an interesting race to watch. I'm not down on it at all. It's just, I think I'm striving to be a good horse player, but I think a good horse player, part of the makeup of a good horse player is to know what you don't know.
You and Nick talked about that, I thought, very well last week, talking about identifying strengths and weaknesses. So that's smart. For me, as somebody who, I don't have much experience betting these races in the USA either, but I just look for late pace and class and projected trips. Because I don't really know the difference between a horse who can get a mile and a half and a horse who can get 2 miles. You know what I mean? If there are breeding guys out there who can split that at them, God bless them. But the breeding doesn't factor into it as much for me as just looking at those handicapping basics. We'll see if I'm right here. I'm looking forward to it. I have never done great. I've done okay in this race. I haven't like crushed it at all in its brief history, but I'm glad it exists. It makes for a fun feature on the day before the Belmont Stakes. Let's move on to the nightcap on Friday, JK, the race that precedes Southside Johnny's performance on the Belmont Oval. How are we going to get paid?
I like Lila Ruth. Nice figure last time, ran well, just beaten a length there. Did end up finishing fifth, but it was a close fifth. Funny Money. Honey Exploded first time turf. Definite use for me. Did it going, for maiden 40, but still I'm fine with that. A lot of these horses have run for a tag. That's why they're in this starter race. I am against Queen, I guess that's Khan or Cahen, or I guess Cahen, the switch to Linda. I don't like the fact that Rudy entered the horse twice. MTO doesn't necessarily suggest that he's extremely confident that this one's going to like the turf. I trust Linda, who decided to claim, but I'm going to try to beat off of that information. The one that I like the most is the horse drawn to the far outside, and that's Ailish. Ran well last time.
Went tipped by race. You on this show.
Hey, that's what I'm out here. I'm out here trying to give winners. Ran in the same race as Lila Ruth did last time. Didn't run poorly, but didn't run good. But it was off a 228 day break. I would expect that there'll be an improvement off of that long layoff for this filly to get her back fit, get her ready to rock. Joelle it shows up here, and I think she could be extremely dangerous with what looks like could be an improvement. She ran a 90 time form figure last time. If there is an improvement to be made off of the break and second off the layoff, she fits perfectly with these, and so she'll be my top pick. But I'll use the other two as well, Lila Ruth and Funny Money Honey.
Okay, I'm glad you clarified that. I think listeners sometimes get confused when you get to the top pick last, but I understand, when, especially in this show. I like the way you described it on the show with Nick, where it's not as much about just giving a pick as it is trying to give an approach to the race, but it is always good when you can land on the pick, and I think you very clearly are going with Ailish in that sense. For me, and I want your opinion on Smokin' Deb, who I thought looked very interesting in here, getting on turf for the first time for connections that know what a good turf horse looks like, having done some training down at Bridlewood, an opportunity to see move over a number of surfaces, drawn to the inside. I thought it was a wire chance for our friend Jonathan Thomas. No Smokin' Deb for you?
Like you said, for connections and a trainer that knows what a turf horse looks like, I think the length of time it took to get on the turf is one that makes me feel like JT kind of already established maybe this wasn't a turf horse, and let's see if we can possibly you know, maybe sneak a turf win into this one, or let's give another shot on the turf. So I don't doubt it. I love the tactical portion of it. You get Javier, all of those reasons that could work out. But there's not a whole lot that's screaming turf to me in this situation.
I feel like, especially with young horses and knowing how much money there is to be made on the dirt, it makes sense to give horses every chance on the dirt a lot of times. Just there's more money to be made, I think. And then I think it's illogical. It's not like they gave up immediately. And the horse showed that she can run a bit, and I think might be just a little bit better than some of the rivals here today. We'll see. It's definitely a disagreement for us on this one, but that's when the shows are the most fun. It's not fun going through and agreeing about everything. So yeah, Smoke and Deb for me in the nightcap. Few good ideas from you. Oh, just an incidental. I did know someone with the last name of, I forget what number it is. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Queen Khan. It might be Khan. It might be Kahen. I don't know. We'll see what Larry Colmas says, but I would have gone with Khan just based on my own life experience. Any other thoughts on this or anything else on Friday at Belmont?
One last thing about Smoke and Deb that I will mention is November 9th, 2018, they entered the horse MTO. If JT had a sense that maybe this one will like the turf, I just feel like they would have entered the horse straight rather than MTO and given the horse a chance to run on either one if it happens to come off.
I like that point a lot better as a knock than the other, but I'm just going to say maybe there was some other reason that happened and stick with my guns. We should text him and ask. All right. We are ready now to bring in our special guest. And now it's my great pleasure to welcome to the Naira Betts podcast one of my favorite performers of all time, Southside Johnny. How you doing today?
I'm good. Everything seems to be going well, and the weather is nice. And I just got back from Spain and Prague, Czechoslovakia, so I'm a little jet lagged, but I was never coherent anyway.
Now, we met many years ago. I have a couple of footnotes in rock and roll history. Many people listening to the show know that my father, same name, Pete Fornital, was one of the pioneers of what we used to call progressive FM rock and roll radio. But they don't know my other footnote in rock history, John, which is at one of the WXRK rent parties back in the day that we used to do for Why Hunger, where you performed, I got to move your car from one side of the street to the other.
You didn't look at the trunk, did you?
No, I was not that much of a snoop. I considered it, but I quickly abandoned the idea. But yeah, so we met back in the day, and that was so much fun being part of that scene because of my dad, having the great opportunity to meet people such as yourself.
Well, it was a great time back then. We really, everybody seemed to be on the same page, and we were very excited about the opportunity to be recognized, both DJs and artists. It was a free flowing exchange of ideas and music, and it was a great time.
I have so many things I want to talk to you about musically. This is a horse racing podcast, so I'm going to change the tack that I would normally take. I can't channel my inner Pete Fornital here.
Well, you know what? I'm a big race horse fan, too. I used to go to the track with my old man, and he taught me how to handicap.
That's awesome. Did you go to Monmouth, I'm going to guess?
Monmouth, a lot of times at Monmouth. I've been to Belmont. I've been to Aqueduct. I went to a track in Florida that I cannot remember. But there was a lot of drinking involved, so it's okay. Yeah, I love the racetrack. I mean, I still go with some friends of mine, and sometimes we make money, sometimes we don't.
I know one friend of yours is a big racing fan who I've run into a couple of times at Santa Anita, Steve Van Zandt. Have you talked to him recently?
I haven't spoken to him in a while. He's on the road and I'm on the road. But we did meet up in Amsterdam and I came out and sang with him and all like that. He and I used to go to the track a lot. And we had some friends that were Newsome jockeys. And we would get tips, and occasionally they would come in, and we felt like the biggest of big shots. You know what I mean?
That's fantastic. I want to know, what was a typical day at the track like for you guys?
Well, we would get there for the first race, and we'd bet the Daily Double. But then we would go and we would have a few drinks. And we might skip the third race because, things intervene. But if we won the double or if we won any kind of the exactas, then we were solidly locked in. I remember one time we were there, we stayed for the last race because there was, we played the, I think it was the trifecta for the last race. And some really long shot came in, and we're all real disappointed. And we look at it, put the prices up, and we hear this scream from a balcony, and some woman had won $11,000 on the trifecta.
It's amazing.
And we were looking at our tickets going, well, that's not me. You don't hear me screaming.
Well, I want to talk about the gig coming up. We're doing this sort of like the old school musician interview. You know, the new school is we talk all about, you know, every aspect of your career from soup to nuts. In the old days, it used to be more about, you know, hey, and you've got the big gig coming up. Yeah, we're going to be at the amphitheater Friday night. We'll do that part of the interview now. Because I keep telling people, a lot of the listeners to the show, obviously, big racetrack degenerates, and we use that term affectionately, and I'm telling them,
yes, of course,
they got to hang around and check you out Friday night. Tell us about the performance. What's your you got the whole band there? What can we expect?
Yeah, we played Belmont a couple of times before, and we played Monmouth Park, too. I think we're supposed to do one song before some race, and then we're going to do like an hour after the races or something like that. I just got it in my email, and I haven't really, because, you know, I'm going to be there all day, and I'm sure I'll be out at the paddock looking at the horses going, I don't even know what I'm looking at. But we are supposed to play for an hour, I think, after the races. So, you know, it's not that late.
No, I think that's going to fit in neatly before many people's dinner plans. And if you have to push the dinner plans a little bit later, I'm telling you, people, it's absolutely worth it. I would say, Johnny, that I would put your live performances. And when I think of the concerts I've been to, and I've been to a lot of concerts since my dad took me to see Harry Chapin in the late 1970s. That was my first show.
Right.
And in that time, I'm going to put you as a top three concert. It is an amazing experience to see you perform live. And that's my first serious question for you. I feel like you've got this amazing performer's charisma, and you've done some acting over the years. I recall seeing you the first time. I'd listened to your music before, dancing around with my dad in the living room, but the first time I think I ever physically saw you was on an episode of SCTV back in the day. And I remember
with John Candy and Eugene and all the rest of them. We were there. That was up in Calvary in Canada, and the sun stayed up till forever. it was summertime, and I remember we got there, and I couldn't sleep because the sun was up, and I couldn't close the curtain, so I didn't get a lot of sleep. But at 9 o'clock in the morning, 8:30, 9 o'clock, we were supposed to be there for rehearsals, even though we were just playing, but they put me in a couple of skits. And John Candy comes in, walking in around 9:30, comes over to me and goes, you're Southside Johnny. He puts his big arm around me and says, come with me, and walked me out the place and into a bar that was right next to it, and we started drinking martinis at 9:30 in the morning. I sound like an old luscious, always all of my stories about drinking. I'm not that bad of a drunk, really.
It makes you near and dear to our audience, and on this show, my co-host, Jonathan Kinchin.
I always knew when my parents won, and my mother and father would go to the racetrack. I always knew when they won because they come in and corral us kids, and we go to Pete and Elder's, the pizza joint, and have pizza and stuff because they won money. If they didn't win any money, then they would come home and we'd have hot dogs and beer.
Not a bad, not a bad alternative, but not nearly as fun as going out for the pizza. And then
that's exactly right. Yeah.
Through my fandom of yours, I've seen you over the years in many other visual projects. One that I saw recently, a movie called Between the Lines. How much you remember about that?
That was, I guess it was 76, 77. Joe Micklin Silver directed it. Jeff Goldblum was in it. A bunch of people were in it. And we were playing at night at Sun Club in New York, and we had to get up at 5:30 in the morning to be there to be in our scenes in the movie. So we were completely devastated as far as lack of sleep.
Oh,
but it was fun. It was interesting. It was the first time I'd ever been in a movie set and kind of behind the scenes when we weren't in the scene and see how people interacted and all. And it was very fascinating to me.
The movie holds up amazingly well. Have you revisited it in the last few years?
I haven't seen it in 30 years.
It's worth rewatching. Not only are you excellent, but it really sort of presaged a lot of what's happened in journalism just in the last like decade or so. Not positive things, but it really,
it
was a very forward-thinking film, and I recommend people check it out. And then I've seen you in, you were in a Sopranos episode. I believe I saw you more recently in a Billions episode. You've got this performer's charisma. Did you ever think about giving acting more of a go professionally? Because I think you could have done it.
Well, the problem with acting is that it is the only spontaneity of it is when you're actually acting. And then you have the director saying, no, do it this way, no, do it that way. But you sit around and do nothing for hours and hours and hours. And that's just not appealing to me. Also, I like to do whatever I want to do on stage. So it's a different discipline. The actors have to know their lines, have to hit their marks, have to be able to, you know, mold their acting to what the director wants and what they want. And me, I just want to go on stage, and if I forget the lyrics, I'll make up some new ones. Just let me, I really just want to have fun and make music and get emotionally involved in it. I guess acting is like that, but it is really a tough racket, and it's not appealing to me. Plus, you got to get up early in the morning. I am not a musician to get up early in the morning. That's not one of the appeals.
I don't know. I mean, do any musicians get up early in the morning? I would say of all the great oversleepers I've met in my life, the co-host of this program is one of them, but the others are all musicians.
Yes, musicians... like Steve Van Zandt said in one song, I don't open my eyes until midnight. We used to, when we all shared an apartment one time, and we would get up really 11 o'clock noon and then fumble around. And then, you know, but we didn't go out to face the world until 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, because that's when the action was starting, you know. And we just got used to it. We'd be up all night making music or talking or playing cards. We didn't want a day job. We didn't have a day job. We had a night job, and it was great.
You are known as the father, I suppose one of the fathers of the Jersey sound. Where did it come from?
I don't think there is a Jersey sound. I think there's a Jersey ethos in that you've got to work hard on stage, because these are pretty much blue-collar people that we play to, and they work hard, and they expect us to work hard, too, and be honest about it, be sincere on stage. But it's also the idea that New Jersey was such a joke state for so, and still is. I mean, people still say, New Jersey, ha, ha, ha. And it gives you a real chip on your shoulder. You think, oh, yeah, I'm from New Jersey. What's this? And it gave us the impetus to be very aggressive and hard-charging on stage, and I think that's one of the main standbys of bands from New Jersey. They really, you know, they really kick the crap out of it as much as they possibly can. There's no relaxing on stage.
In the famous interview where Bon Jovi said you gave him a reason to sing, basically inspiring his whole, you know, the mega crazy explosion that's been his career. How did that make you feel to hear somebody from the younger, from a generation younger, talk about you in those terms?
Guilty. He could have been something. He could have been a doctor. I've John's always been a big supporter, and he's a good friend, and he works hard on stage too, and he knows if he doesn't, I'm going to yell at him, and he's yelled at me. But I'd say, keep moving, old man, keep moving. So it's a very supportive relationship in that we both, you know, we know how hard it is to make any kind of headway. And so you support each other. It's been the same with all of us from New Jersey. There's no real competition in the sense that you think I can do better than him or any of that stuff. It's, hey, he's great. I'm going to support him. Or, you know, I like him. We've all played in each other's bands. There's just a big support group.
I put you in my top three live shows another everybody can probably guess, your cohort, Bruce Springsteen. And then the third one might surprise people because he barely plays live. But when I saw Tom Waits live several years ago at the Beacon Theater, he put on an effort that was Herculean. I mean, absolutely amazing performer. Why is it? I want to ask you about him specifically, and I'll get to that in a minute. But why is it for some performers, it seems like the act of going out there on stage energizes them, and for others, it's almost they can do that. They can be a great performer. I'm not talking about these shoegazing types. You can be a great performer, but still, there's something in it that takes so much out of them that they don't do it that often. Can you explain that to me?
I think Tom doesn't like a lot of the aspects of travel as far as playing. You know, he's great when he's on stage. He loves being on stage. He loves interacting with the audience. But I think that's just the whole rigmarole of it is daunting. I don't, you know, he used to love to drive. He had this big old Cadillac. I remember driving around the streets of Manhattan with him, and he used to tell me about how he loved to drive on the freeways of California. But I think he's gotten away from a lot of that, and I think he's rather stay home, and his kids are grown. I don't know. I really don't know what's behind that. But when he does play, he's spectacular. It's one of those things you see, and you go, I'm never going to forget this.
You are such a great interpreter of wide ranges of material. I know you've done a number of Waits songs over the years. What is it about his material that you connect with?
I just love the lyrics and the whole feel of street people and people with strange lives and the down and dirty and the nitty gritty. He can be very sentimental, very romantic, but he can also face the fact that people have real hardship and bizarreness in life. What I think I like the most, or one of the things I like the most, is his great melodies, which sometimes get lost in his own interpretations of songs, because he's trying to find a different way of doing it than just straight ahead. And I admire that, but I also think sometimes the songs get a little lost, and that's why I like to do them. I just love the songs, and I want people to hear them, you know, for a song instead of this crazy, eccentric performer. Not that I'm not that, too.
But... As you were describing it, the song that popped in my head was Dion's cover of Heart of Saturday Night. I had any chance to mention Dion to honor my father. You know, they were buddies. Do you know that recording?
Yes, I am familiar with that, and we've played with Dion, and he is such a gentleman and a great guy and tells great stories. He's one of my heroes. He taught me, he's along with Benny King and Ray Charles, he's one of the guys I learned to sing from, all the improvised all the syllables that he would throw in just to keep the rhythm going. It was a real education, Dion.
Oh, that's very, very cool. Well, you tell him Pete Fornatale says hi, and it's great to know that that connection is there. And then, of course, it seems to me that you take that influence, that very city influence, and you take, I guess, the Stax sound had to be a huge influence on your recordings throughout your career. What about that resonated with you?
Yeah, I like Stax and all the Southern stuff more than I like Motown, although Marvin Gaye was great. You know, I mean, Motown had some incredible performers and great songwriters and records. But when I first heard Otis Redding, I thought, who is that? And that sparse, drenched in emotion delivery really spoke to me. And, you know, then Sam and Dave and all the rest of them. To me, it just seemed much more raw and much more powerful than a lot of the poppier R&B that came out of Motown. So that's the kind of stuff I gravitated to when I started to sing. I did a lot of blues, Chicago style blues, but there was always some Stax Volt songs that got in there because people would dance to them too. So, you know, that was important.
That's a great point. I missed the chance to bring it full circle before when you were talking about the Waits songwriting and strange people and the nitty gritty. I could have said, hey, you brought it right back to the racetrack. So it really is a world that you see that overlap. I can understand what's appealing to you about the track. I mean, horse players as a people, how would you describe them? If you were talking to somebody who didn't know what your typical horse player was like, as somebody who spent a lot of time at the track, how would you describe what you see from the people when you go there?
I love the plaid jackets and the green pants. That's right. I remember, and I still do see, there's so many great characters at the track. People have gone forever. New people are just finding it out. I mean, there's a lot of people that come that are just normal people who just have to have a good time. But the real track denizens, you know, are so great. They are all from a Tom Waits song, you know, a Jim Jarmusch movie. And I remember one of my favorite moments at the racetrack. My father took me to the racetrack. I was a teenager then, I guess. And he comes in and he's got on like a tan jacket and blue slacks or some, you know, some bizarre combination. And he looks over and he says, "Hey, that's Count Basie." Because Count Basie, of course, was from Red Bank.
Yep.
And when Count Basie was in town, he loved to go to the Monmouth Park, to Monmouth Park. So my father goes running over to him because my father's a huge Count Basie fan. And I went, "Oh, God." And my father goes over to him. He goes, "Hey, Count." And he pulls out his racing form. And the two of them put their heads together and they... Forget the fan thing. They were right into fourth race, number seven. Oh, you're crazy. Number five's going to be. And it was just a beautiful moment for
that's
me.
Amazing.
It was Count Basie and my father. And Count Basie had on the plaid jacket and the green slacks. And my father had on the tan jacket and the blue slacks. And I thought, this, I want this captured. I want this on film. I want, you know, somebody to film this. But I remember it, so that's, you know, as good as I can get, I guess.
That's amazing, Johnny. I got goosebumps as you were telling that story. And I also love the fact that Jim Jarmusch gets a call. We've now fully established our hipster bona fides.
Well, you know, I mean, there's people who dwell in that kind of outland of people who don't fit in into normal society. And as a musician, growing up in the 60s and 70s, I know what that feels like. You know, we were always mocked. And what are you going to be, the Beatles? And you better get a backup. You better go to school. And, you know, all that crap. And we were determined to be musicians. And so we were kind of oddballs. But we reveled in it because we didn't want to be like the squares. And you see the people at the racetrack, and they are just the same as us. They don't want to lead a normal life. They know what they like and they want it.
Oh, that is the best description. I've never quite put that together the way you just expressed it. And it is just, the truth is just raining down upon me when you talk about that, that, you know, you want to do your own thing and have a good time while doing it. There's plenty of overlap. My life finally makes sense, Johnny. I was supposed to go into music broadcasting. I ended up in horse racing and now I know why. Thank you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you find what you like, and if other people don't like you doing it, then screw them.
On that note, we're going to tell people one more time, stick around. If you're at Belmont tomorrow, stick around for the concert. If you're not at Belmont tomorrow, you're doing it wrong. Come out to Belmont tomorrow, and then stick around for the concert. Southside Johnny, absolutely one of the pleasures of my broadcasting career talking to you here today.
Thanks a lot, T. I appreciate it.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the Naira Betts Late Pick 5 podcast. Boy, I'm recording this right after hanging up the phone with Johnny, and I'm still sort of buzzing from the conversation. How fun was that? Southside Johnny will start our thank yous with you. For more of Southside Johnny's music, check out southsidejohnny.com. We'll also thank Jonathan Kinchin. Most of all, I want to thank all of you, the listeners. And boy, I'd love to share stuff about the track with you. We got some great racetrack stories there, and you just make the show so much fun to do. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your Belmont photos. Making up the rules.
And we never felt cold. Oh, we were never gonna get old.
It's been a long time since we lived together. It's been a long time since we cried. Raise a glass for the comrades we've lost. My friend, it's been a long, long time.
Been a long, long time.
Belmont Stakes is finally here. Don't miss out on Naira Betts' exclusive limited-time offer with a $25 money-back Belmont Stakes win bet. Just bet $25 on one horse to win the Belmont Stakes. If your horse finishes second or third, you get your money back. Pretty sweet, right? The bonus is only available for new customers. Sign up today at NairaBets.com and use the promo code MONEY25. That's NairaBets.com, promo code MONEY25.